There is one question every company leader launching a drug is asking itself. How am I going to beat my launch forecast? I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. My guest today is Michael Sarshad, Managing Director at Syneos Health Consulting. Michael knows the answer. We'll talk about Michael and co-author's recent study, Investing for Commercial Success as an Emerging Company. Will investors be surprised in a good way? Will physicians prescribe? Will payers pay? Will patients be thrilled? Will the C-suite be around for the next launch? Investing for Commercial Success as an Emerging Company, the answer, next on the Syneos Health Podcast. Michael Sarshad, welcome back to the Syneos Health Podcast.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
You're following up on a longer-term study. Can you describe the study about investing for commercial success?
Yes, absolutely. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to take a step back and understand, okay, what does it take to be successful when launching a drug commercially these days? And so we looked at retrospectively how much money and how much investment in different areas and functions companies need to spend on average in order to be successful. The way we did that is we had to isolate different variables that we could look at. So we looked at only public companies that we could take a look at their SG&A that's being reported and only companies that were launching a single asset. We did so over a period of about 18 years. And we really wanted to understand, okay, what are the success criteria from a launch investment perspective? And do we see any trends in terms of what is successful versus unsuccessful? And success is something that's an interesting term because people define success differently. But again, in order to standardize it, what we did is we said, okay, we're defining success as reaching the target analyst consensus for your forecast. So the forecast is by the analyst, not by the company, because obviously if it's by the company, it's a little bit biased. But if you're hitting your forecasts for the next 4 years post-launch, then we're considering that a success. Previously, we had done the study for about 10 years of data, and we've expanded it now to about 18 years.
All right. So that seems like a very compelling thing that one needs to know. If we are a company that is looking to launch a drug, the question that is received by essentially every investor is, how much are you spending? How much do you need? And what are you spending it on? That sounds like that's what we're looking at. What do you need? How much are you spending? What are you spending it on? And do you get anything out of it? Is that basically what we're trying to figure out?
100%. And also, when are you spending? The when is also a crucial component because people need to map out their finances 3-4 years before launch and a few years post launch as well. And so that cadence of when are you investing in what, at what time, how much, all of that through launch and a couple of years post is really what every company needs to have a good grip of.
Yeah. And we're looking at, as you said, what the analysts think the forecast is going to be. What is the product going to do, likely to do? These are publicly available numbers. They're guesses or best guesses or informed guesses or deep analyses to figure out, well, how well will this drug do? And that is nice because it also helps scale for different products that might just have natural success. If you have a product that is naturally good in diabetes, you're going to have more revenue than something that is naturally good in something that only 10 people have. Fair?
Yes, exactly. We wanted to right size it. We wanted to make sure that one, companies can't sandbag and give their own number and then they exceed it. That's obviously not fair for the analysis. And two, we wanted to make sure that whether you're a small rare disease company or whether you're launching in a gigantic therapeutic area, your target is relatively still going to be the same, which is the analyst consensus. The other thing I'll mention about that is, again, just to make sure that we were doing this in a fair manner, is we took the analyst consensus at a given point in time before launch, meaning obviously once the product launched, analyst consensus will change. We didn't move the needle to account for that. We kept them essentially on the hook for what the analysts were predicting prior to launch.
You said that it could be basically any company, but in reality, because we're focused on these pure play companies, their first asset to market, it is a kind of company. there is a range of companies that that has in mind. It's not a startup. It's not something that's launched 50 products, because if they've launched 50 products and they're big pharma, there's no way to tease out exactly what they spent on this particular drug. Am I understanding at least the limitations and why you chose these kinds of companies?
Yeah, that's a great point. To add to that, also only biopharma therapeutic products. So no med device or tech, med tech or anything like that. It was purely therapeutic drugs. And what you said is accurate. I'll also throw in a quick quip, just the thing that we learned as well. While it's the company's first product, we did see in the analysis and the data that if the C-suite and leadership of that company had significant launches under their belt previously, the company was also more likely to be successful. So their experience translated over, even though it was the company's first asset.
And how did you decide that? That is not something that is flagged in normal financial analyses.
That one actually came out through more of the interviews and the survey data that we did with over, I think, about 700 biopharma professionals over the past 10 years, is to really understand the impact from a qualitative perspective of which CEOs had experience and then how their companies performed financially. So we paired the two together.
With the current analysis, we're looking at how many companies?
We're looking at about 40 companies.
So it is a relatively small sample, but not nothing. But they're hard companies to find. You have to find the pure play company. It has to be in biopharma, not med tech. It has to be something where there is some kind of analyst coverage. Not every company that launches has analyst coverage. And you may have no revenue estimate out there other than what the company thinks. And so you have to find ones that have coverage. Fair enough. So let's start. What do we find?
Great question. First of all, we did the analysis previously, and our magic number was you need to be spending about 75% of your year one forecasted revenue in the year before launch timeframe. So what we're calling L minus one. So at L minus one, you need to be spending at least 75% of your first year forecasted revenue to be successful. Now, fast forward that to today's data, and that number has increased significantly. In today's data, you actually really need to be spending between 150 to 250% to be successful. So again, that is in your year before launch, the amount of money that you need to be spending on average, when we looked at the collective, is between 150 to 250% of your year one forecasted revenue to be successful.
I guess it makes sense. We have an idea of what our forecasted revenue is, meaning whatever the analysts are saying. And if we spend much more, say double the amount that is forecasted for the launch year, if we spend double that in the year before, we're going to exceed or may exceed the expectations of what the analysts have. What do you spend the money on? If you haven't been involved in a launch, if you're listening to this and wondering, well, what do you spend money on before a launch? You're not out there. What are we spending the money on? What even can be spent? We're not talking about direct to consumer advertising, not before launch. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a great question. And we asked a lot of executives this as well. Not only what are you spending on launch, because we have standard items that we all know about, but also where do you feel you underinvested in your launch that you wish you would have spent some more money on in particular? So obviously we know there's unbranded marketing in cases of smaller disease areas. There's market access, which is huge, especially in today's day and age. Medical affairs, also a large one, I would say maybe 5 years ago would have been a surprise. I don't think today that's a surprise any longer. But also supply chain, distribution, logistics, ensuring that your distribution channels and everything that is required on the back end, you're investing in to make sure that you don't have any logistical challenges at launch. And from all of those, I would say med affairs, market access, those seem to really be the top two that always bubble up from executives saying, hey, I wish I'd spent a little bit more on these two because they were really crucial to my launch.
And then just for somebody who, again, who isn't involved in these launches, okay, we're talking about medical affairs. Okay, we're talking about market access. We might even be talking about the commercialization teams. What are we spending on before launch? Do we hire the sales force in advance? Do we hire the teams in advance? Are we talking teams or are we talking things that we are doing?
Mostly things. Teams usually come a little bit later and closer to launch. I mean, the biggest finding in the study is most companies are not spending enough in the L-3 timeframe. So that's 3 years prior to launch.
Whoa, that is a ways back. I'm surprised by that because L-3, we may not even have a public release of our top line data. Why would we be spending much more and seeing more success back there? That frankly shocks me, honestly, Michael.
Yes, it definitely can be shocking. But you got to think, Jeff, with many of these things, it's a long tail. So Med Affairs and medical strategy in particular, and clinical strategy as an example, you're going to be thinking about, okay, what type of papers do I need to publish? What type of data do I need for that? How do I need to plan that out over the next few years as my top lines become released and I need follow on? I need to be able to build upon the data that comes out. I need to be presenting at different conferences. So there's a strong medical and clinical strategy that needs to evolve pretty early on. And then the other thing is we talk quite a bit about clinical trial planning. From a clinical perspective, I think it's pretty understandable. All right, you got to make sure you hit your endpoints. You got to make sure you interact with the FDA. But then there are things like market access and physician adoption and say, okay, I know I can hit these clinical endpoints, or I believe my products can hit these clinical endpoints, but how do I ensure coverage? Are my physicians going to want to adopt this product outside of just the minimum required FDA approval? Do they actually believe this product is valuable to my patient and client? And at the end of the day, from a market access perspective, from a payer perspective, are these the right endpoints that I'm going to be comparing this therapy against other drugs on the market? So thinking about these things and investing in advance at the L-3 timeframe can actually set the trajectory of your drug success much farther in advance.
Let me give at least one alternative explanation of what you're seeing in the data and just push back or say that, in fact, yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know which one it is, by the way. Alternative explanation is that the products and the companies with the greatest promise seen by their investors are the ones that get the best people. They get the best investment early on. They get the most, and they're the ones that also exceed expectations the most just because they're better than average. And the only thing really holding them back was the fact that it's clinical and it's risky.
That's a great hypothesis. I will say, though, looking at the experience of the executive team plays a much more prominent role in the success of the product, because having a great product, great, makes your life easy. You can commercialize it much easier. You already have physician adoption. Winning the scientific communities is going to be easier. But understanding what it takes to launch, how much, when, where, the experience that executive team brings actually plays a more crucial role. Because I'll tell you, there have been products, even in our analysis specifically, that clinically were very sound. They met a high unmet need. The scientific community was behind the product, but they weren't able to achieve their consensus forecast. And oftentimes we found that the reason is they weren't investing at the right time, the right amount. And oftentimes that also is they're either not bringing the right executive team on board or they're not bringing the right advisors to help bring them up to speed.
You know, it's funny because that's in addition to people that are inexperienced making the errors of inexperience, where they just don't get the things done that need to get done. So it's not just a question of missing forecasts. It's a question of, oh, I needed to apply for that code to get reimbursement far in advance, not just now. That's an example of something that if you hadn't lived it, you may not realize.
Yeah, exactly. And we just had a panel at Biotech Showcase Conference this year, and we had a panel of four senior executives at these types of organizations, small biotech, emerging biotech, looking to launch their first or second product. And one of the panelists said it very well. They said, look, you need your executive team to have experience. You need them to know and understand what it has taken to launch a product in the past so they can replicate it. But they also need people that are going to roll up their sleeves. So they need the doers on their team as well. It's a fine balance between having experience and also the people that are willing to roll up their sleeves, dig into the data, put in those hours, and get the work done. Because whenever you're launching your first product, you're obviously going to be short of some type of funding. And it's really a lot of sweat equity that needs to be put in. And having that balance of experience and sweat equity and people who are willing to put in the sweat equity is really the magic success.
Thinking through the launches that I was on the Nurtec launch in migraine, and the team was experienced, the larger team that was there, and the team was willing to spend, and they spent, and they did great at launch. So I'm just trying to think back to the ones that either exceeded forecast or did not. And it sounds like you're right. At least my anecdotal experience comports with what you're seeing in something more formal in a study, though I hadn't really thought through why this one worked and why that one did not.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple of other interesting stats at you just for the audience, because I think it's interesting for them to know. So a question that we get often is, okay, yes, you're defining success as hitting your forecast post 4 years of launch. Most executives will say, look, if I don't hit my forecast in year one, I'm done. I'm out. They're kicking me out. So the data does show that over 75% of the companies who we deemed as successful did hit their year one forecasted number. So I would say there is some truth to, if you want to be successful, for the most part, you got to be hitting your year one forecast. In some instances, you know, you've got some flex and you don't hit year one, but maybe you hit year two. So that does exist. Of those companies that hit their year one forecast, on average, they're spending about 230% of their forecasted year revenue in that L minus one, the year before launch timeframe. Now, the other thing I will mention, though, is just because you're spending a certain amount, so let's say you spend 300% in that year before launch timeframe, that doesn't necessarily guarantee success. So the data also shows that overspending does not guarantee success. We didn't have 100% of companies that spent 300% or more in L minus one that were successful. There were still a handful of those companies that were not successful. And again, those go to the intangibles, as we were just speaking about as well.
Well, that's good. That means the world works. Science works. Good products win. Bad products lose and lose badly, as they should.
Exactly.
Any other final findings just to wrap up where we are so far? The successful ones spend twice to three times what their year one revenue is expected to be. And those are the ones that are successful. That is, they exceed the analyst average forecast. And separately, we know from other information, anecdotally, but large anecdotal information from those that are in the know, that having an experienced team helps dramatically, in some cases, the company to succeed when otherwise on paper, they look like they may not succeed, or vice versa. A experienced leadership team can miss something beyond the spend. Is there anything else from the study that you did and that you've extended now to more companies and more years that is a crucial factor for success for a company that's launching their first product?
Yeah, investing in the data and investing in market research early on is really going to be one of the key success factors. And look, I get it. When you don't have enough money to spend on trials and on bringing with the right personnel and things like that, do I really need to invest an X amount of money on a study with payers or patients or HCPs? And you're thinking like, okay, maybe later on I'm going to push that. But honestly, the data really does provide a great roadmap for your strategy for commercial success. So I would tell people, just don't be afraid to spend the money in the thousands, because it's going to ultimately impact the trajectory of your product in the millions down the road.
All right, Michael Sarshad, thank you again for joining us on the Syneos Health Podcast.
No problem. Thanks, Jeff.
That's all for today's episode of the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. If you want to talk through a hard decision you're making at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@syneoshealth.com. For access to more future-focused, actionable life sciences insights, visit the Syneos Health Insights Hub at insightshub.health. Syneos Health, shortening the distance from lab to life.